We interrupt your regularly scheduled podcast to bring you Listen, Watch, Discuss. Enjoy the show. Real quick, guys, before the episode begins, I'd just like to point out that there will be spoilers for the South Park post-COVID special and the first two episodes of Hawkeye. So if you haven't yet seen either of these episodes, stop the review and go watch them before you listen to the rest of the review. But if you don't care about spoilers, then by all means, please continue. With that being said, let's get on to the review. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Listen, Watch, Discuss. As always, I'm your host, Brent Aiken. And on tonight's episode, I will be reviewing South Park's latest special, post-COVID, and the first two episodes of Marvel's new series, Hawkeye. So, I guess we'll start off with South Park's new special. So, yeah, a few months ago, back in August, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, the creators of South Park, announced a deal with Viacom. And basically, the show, they ended up getting the show renewed through season 30, which will take the show all the way through 2027. And there's also going to be a series of films made exclusively for Paramount Plus. So, and technically, this is a made-for-TV movie or made-for-streaming movie, but you could call it a special, too. I mean, because the other two, the pandemic and the vaccination special, were both the length of this TV movie, you know, so... you could call it whichever you want. But yeah, so it's clear that South Park isn't ending anytime soon, at least not for the next 6 years. And it'll probably even go on further than that. Who knows? Depends on how long they want to keep making the show, you know? But I, for one, am glad that they're still continuing the show because I love the show and really looking forward to what's to come next, especially after having seen this special. I'm really curious to see what's going to happen. So with that being said, let's get on to the review of South Park's new special post-COVID. So yeah, so technically it is a made-for-TV movie. It's like a, you know, like I said, it's the first in a series of South Park films that are going to be made for Paramount Plus. And yeah, it came out Thanksgiving. I just got done watching it, though, about an hour ago. And it was a really good special. It's in the same vein as the previous two specials that they made, the pandemic special and the vaccination special. And it's really good. It's very good. But so basically what happens is we start off 40 years in the future, in 2061, and basically, all the kids have kind of moved on with their lives, and they've all grown up and matured. And it was very cool to see all the different ways that they, all the different ways that the kids aged. It was kind of neat to see what all they were doing, you know, as adults. And it was so cool to see them as adults too, because, you know, for most of the show, for all of the show, we've only seen them as kids. So it was kind of neat to see what they'd look like as like middle-aged adults. And and so basically it starts off with Stan watching a news report about the fact that the COVID-19 pandemic is finally starting to die down, and unfortunately for the citizens of South Park, it's 40 years later where it's finally starting to die down. And but Stan's moved away. We find out that he's moved away to the city, and it's not really specified which city, just the city. But he's moved away from South Park to a big, bustling city, and he has a job as an online whiskey sampler. And he lives with an Amazon Alexa that projects itself into a female form. So, because at first you think, oh, he's married, you know, he's got a wife when she walks through the door. But then the way she's talking in like this kind of, you know, straightforward kind of robotic voice, you're like, oh, okay, it's an Amazon Alexa. And the female form that the Alexa has chosen to take is that of a stereotypical nagging, you know, wife. So so that was kind of a nice little joke to kind of throw the audience off of, you know, the fact that, oh, well, at least Stan's married. It's like, nope. He's all alone and just has an Alexa projecting himself as a wife to keep him company. But Stan's watching a news report, you know, saying, oh, hey, so the COVID-19 pandemic's finally about to be over. And when all of a sudden he gets a call from Stan, Stan gets a call from Kyle, who's now the guidance counselor at their old elementary school. And he basically calls him and tells him, hey, Stan, you remember how we said we'd always be there for each other whenever something bad happened? And Stan's like, yeah. And Kyle's like, yeah, well, the thing is, something bad happened. Kenny's dead. And Stan's like, you know, kind of taken aback by this because he's like, oh, shit, Kenny's dead, you know, like, which, I mean, and if you've seen the show, you know, Kenny dies all the time and he comes back to, I mean, you know, and he's always fine the next episode. It's been a running joke since the very beginning. But the fact that that's kind of like the plot point of this special, and the fact that he's you know, in his, you know, mid-40s and he's dead, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like an interesting kind of mystery they set up as to like who killed Kenny and why did they kill him. And but after Stan gets the call from Kyle, he ends up returning to South Park along with several other of the kids who have left, like Jimmy, who's now a late night talk show host. But the twist, which was pretty funny, is that since Jimmy was such a comedian when he was a kid, he on his late night talk show, every time he tries to tell a joke, it's like, oh, you think he's going to tell like this kind of stereotypical, not offensive, but like a joke that some might think is offensive. You know, he's going to tell like this joke. But he ends up, every time he, you know, sets up the joke, he ends it by saying, like, oh, no, these people are very nice and I wouldn't wish ill upon them at all or something. You know, like there's this one line, there's this one joke he says on his show where he's like, or I think it's on his show, but it's in the special. He says, hey, so I just flew into South Park on this Asian airline today. You know what they say about Asians? They say about Asian airlines, don't you? Oh yeah, they're always the great, and everyone that works on the airlines, all the Asians are wonderful people, and everyone's laughing like he just told a joke. But it's funny because it's presenting a future where we can't tell jokes, and in a way, that's kind of where we're heading now, with a lot of shows, with a lot of comedians, where they're afraid to tell any jokes whatsoever because they're worried they might offend someone, like, or someone that's not even in the group that the joke is, talking about, will think that's offensive, even if they're not a part of that group. So it's just like, you know, but that was hilarious because, you know, just the fact that Jimmy has to like censor his comedy and basically not even really censor it, the fact that he's not even allowed to like make any jokes, like the fact that all his jokes are just like overly nice sentiments about the people who are in the joke, like, you know, the fact that he can't say anything because, you know, it might be deemed offensive, is like that was just the perfect like setup to that was the perfect like future for Jimmy, like that was a good way to set up his, you know, it was a good way to introduce us to him as an adult. But yeah, so Jimmy's late night talk show host. Wendy has grown up. She's doing well. She got married. She's gotten married to this new guy. She's married. She's married to someone outside of the town. Craig and Tweak are still together, and you know, they're doing good. And but yeah, so they all end up. Oh, and Token is now a cop. He's a law enforcement officer. And Clyde, who, well, we don't really know what he's doing, but he's just kind of fat and, you know, just, just, I don't know, he just seems kind of like a slob. But they all end up going to Kenny's funeral, or at the wake, and then they end up going to the funeral the next day. But at Kenny's wake, Stan and Kyle are reintroduced to Cartman. And it's there where we find out that, it's there where we find out that he's become a rabbi, married to a loving Jewish wife, and he has three children. One of whom is like a little baby. Like he has two, He has a son and a daughter, and then a infant son. And but the son, the oldest son, looks just like Cartman and sounds just like him as a kid. It's great. And that's a funny moment between the three of them when Stan is like, "Oh, so you're, you know, like the," because Stan and Kyle are taken aback by this, obviously. It's come to a shock to them because, again, if you've watched the show, you know Cartman is very anti-Semitic towards Kyle, and you know he always puts him down for being Jewish. So the fact that Cartman is a rabbi, obviously you are led to believe that, oh, this is all just some 40-year prank that Cartman's, you know, pulled to get a rise out of Kyle. And Kyle even points this out. Like he starts getting pissed off and he's like, "Cartman, you're just doing this to screw with me." And Cartman is like, throughout the whole episode, you keep waiting for him to, you know, pretty much like reveal the joke, you know, like say, "Oh yeah, I was just screwing with you, Kyle. My wife's not Jewish. I'm not actually a rabbi." But no, he doesn't. I mean, throughout the whole episode, he's been genuine to Kyle. He's been nice to him, or he's nice to Kyle. He's genuine to him. And you know, you don't get a sense of animosity. You don't get a sense that there was ever any animosity between them at all, except from Kyle, who, again, like I said, remains pissed off at Cartman throughout the whole episode. but yeah, so it, and again, that was something I didn't expect, from Cartman to be as an adult, but that is clearly, again, like with Jimmy, that's like the perfect setup for, Cartman's future. That's the perfect, that makes total sense for Cartman's character to do that. It was great. Perfect setup for his adult life and what, like if anyone was envisioning what the boys' lives would be, it in a way makes total sense for Cartman's life to be that. And again, it would make sense for him to be screwing with Kyle, but again, he's not, or at least he didn't reveal it in this episode. But we find out also at the wake and the funeral that Kenny had become a rich and famous physicist. And he even opened up a science wing in the elementary school. He donated millions of dollars to the school and opened up the science wing. And then after the wake, you know, Stan, he doesn't want to stay in South Park for too long, and he refuses to get involved when Kyle suggests that they follow Kenny's final footsteps and track down his missing data from his last experiment that he was doing before he, you know, mysteriously died. Stan leaves the wake early and he watches a report on Kenny where he spots the name Tegrity Weed in Kenny's notes. He freeze frames on an image of Kenny in front of a giant dry erase board, and there's this huge equation on the board, and Stan manages to spot it, and he tells Alexa to zoom into the TV and enhance, and he zooms in, like, you know, really, really close up, and he sees Tegrity Weed, and then a line over Tegrity, and it's like a fraction, it's like Tegrity Weed, and then a line under it, and then underneath the line it says 420, obviously the number for weed. And so Stan's like, "Oh shit, what was it?" You know, so then Stan ends up going back to, the funeral, and we see Scott Malkinson is now a priest, and every time, this is funny too, is Scott, every time Scott tries to, you know, tell everyone, "Hey guys, remember me? I'm Scott Malkinson. You know, I had diabetes. I'm the one with the lisp. You know, I hung out with you guys when we were kids." No one remembers him, and that's so sad, but it's so funny at the same time, because he was a very, like, tertiary character. I mean, like, Scott didn't have too many episodes dedicated to him, but the fact that none of his friends remember him from when they were kids is just hilarious. But yeah, he's now the priest, I'm assuming taking over from Father Maxie. So Stan becomes angry at the message that Scott gives during Kenny's funeral, because he thinks that Kyle set it up to convince Stan to go visit his dad, Randy, you know, to kind of make up for, you know, the years of, you know, pretty much abandonment, but the years of being isolated from his father and not, and just kind of closing himself off from his, from Randy. And, so Stan leaves pissed off, at Kyle and pretty much everyone else in the town. And, he leaves the funeral and he's about to leave town, but a scientist bursts into the funeral. And he confirms that Kenny's death was a new COVID variant, causing everyone in the town to lose their shit and panic, and leading to a funny little, you know, scene of chaos. But there was a funny little moment in that in the town, like losing their shit. There was a funny moment where they go into a store and everyone starts looting all the toilet paper, again referencing the stupid and nonsensical, you know, thing that, you know, the stupid nonsensical aspect of COVID-19, like in the beginning, like towards, you know, the beginning of last year, where everyone was just buying up toilet paper for some inexplicable reason. No one really knows why they did. Everyone just did. For some reason, you know, I said this in the pandemic, my review for the pandemic special, and I said it in my review for the vaccination special. I will never understand why that was what everyone started hoarding when all that shit went down. I don't think I'll ever find out. I don't think I'll ever know. And I don't think anyone else will either, but it's something that happened. But that was a funny moment. During that little montage of chaos. And, but yeah, so everyone's trying to leave town, obviously. And, and then they end up, and then there's another moment where everyone sticks their kids in front of Zoom classes. They end up logging back onto Zoom and, just plopping their kids down on their desks or in their rooms on their desks in front of their laptops. And it was funny, but everyone tries to leave, including Stan, and the military arrives, basically blocks everyone off from leaving the town. No one can go in or out, and they end up quarantining the town and explaining that there's one person in the town who's not vaccinated, and because they're a risk to everyone who is quarantined, or, you know, and a risk to anyone who might not be outside the town. You know, they're, everyone has to stay isolated in their homes. And, so basically, yeah, Stan is forced to live in the emergency shelter, under PC principal's authority, who is still buff as shit, despite being like in his like 60s, 70s, maybe 80s, somewhere around there, but he's still the same old PC, you know, authoritarian principal that he was, you know, back in the 20s, back in the previous seasons. Nothing's changed much with him. And he has a funny line when he's telling everyone to not use any gender-specific language and things of that nature. But that was a pretty good bit. But Stan finally, you know, since he's, you know, forced to stay in South Park, he finally decides to visit Randy, who's in the Shady Acres retirement home. But elsewhere near Kyle's house, Carmen and his family show up to Kyle's front door and ask if they could stay in his house due to the shelter being full. And and Kyle begrudgingly accepts because he still thinks Carmen's pulling a loan con on him, but he sees his wife and children, and, you know, Kyle's like, I can't leave them out here. So he begrudgingly accepts, he begrudgingly allows them to, stay with them until the quarantine's lifted. And, Carmen ends up annoying Kyle later that night by frequently, like, he's basically getting it on with his wife, having sex with her. And, Carmen's yelling out loud, you know, he's using religious Jewish figures. He's calling out you know, names of religious Jewish figures while he's having sex with his wife, annoying Kyle, and to the point where Kyle bangs on their door and you know, ends up berating Cartman for doing this. And he even ends up telling Cartman's wife that, Cartman gave him AIDS when he was a kid. And she's like, wait, what happened? and it was a funny bit. And then Kyle's like, okay, fine, just try to keep it down, you know, and then he ends up going back to bed or trying to, and then Cartman ends up doing it again, causing Kyle to just bury his head in his pillow. But when Kyle told Cartman's wife that, I was like, and he stopped, I'm like, no, keep going, tell her what a piece of shit Cartman used to be. Because I thought, I'm like, oh shit, he's gonna like dish it all out, he's gonna tell her everything. But no, he just stopped with that. But I mean, that still, even just that one thing that he did, that was pretty shitty. But I mean, Cartman's done plenty of shitty things to Kyle, like when he forced Kyle to do his bidding due to Cartman finally bringing peace in Israel between the Christians, Jews, and Muslims. Cartman pretty much just forcing Kyle to do his bidding so he would keep the peace. I don't know why that's the first one that popped into my head. But other than those two, he's done plenty of shitty things to Kyle, not just those two things, but those two things are the two that are probably two of the worst things he's done. But yeah, that was a good moment. And so we cut to the next day. Stan goes to Shady Acres, where all of the former adults are now senior citizens. He visits his father, and it's revealed after they get a dialogue going, after they start talking, that Sharon wanted a divorce from Randy after the pandemic, when it looked like everything was dying down, because at the end of the vaccination special, everyone was like, hey, we all have the vaccine, we're cured. But no, it everything wasn't fine, because obviously, because 40 years later, it's just now dying down for them. But yeah, but when everyone thought the pandemic was coming to an end, Sharon wanted a divorce, but Randy owned half the farm, leading to a major fight. And Stan, because he was just sick of the farm, he burned it down, not knowing that Shelley was locked in the barn. And the reason why Shelley was locked in the barn was because Randy locked her in there because she refused to do her quote-unquote weed chores, tending to the weed in the farm. So really, the whole thing was Randy's fault. I mean, yeah, Stan shouldn't have burned the barn down, but I get why he did it, because, you know, for the past, what, three seasons, Stan and Randy and Sharon and Shelley have just been stuck on this farm just outside of town, you know, having to endure Randy's talk of farming weed and integrity, you know, and so in a way I get where Stan was coming from. I get why he did it, but still, if Randy hadn't locked her, and he keeps blaming Stan for the whole thing, even though it's like, well, Randy, if you would, Sharon wouldn't have killed herself had you not locked Shelley in the barn, and Shelley wouldn't have been locked in the barn she wouldn't have been locked in the barn had you not locked her in there because she refused to do her chores, you know. So, but anyway, it's there's a few funny moments between Randy and Stan regarding that, but I was like, when they revealed that, I'm like, holy shit, that was dark, because I was wondering the whole time, I'm like, where are Shelley and Sharon at? And then when they revealed that, I'm like, damn, that sucks. but Sharon killed herself after, you know, Shelley died. And that caused Randy and Stan to blame each other for what happened, and they became estranged, and leading to the two of them not seeing each other for 20 years. And, the last time Stan and Randy had any contact was 20 years ago. And, so they escaped the nursing home to Tegrity Farms, by basically, like, they're trying to ask the doctor who resides in the retirement home to let them go, but he refuses, so leading to Randy basically grabbing him up from his chair and yelling at Stan to kick him in the balls and steal his keys, which works. And but they leave and they go to the farm, or what's left of Tegrity Farms, and Randy confesses that he tells Stan that he was the one who started COVID 40 years ago. Which, if you if you remember my review of the pandemic special, or if you watched the pandemic special, you remember that Randy had sex with a pangolin when he was in China with Mickey Mouse, and that's what caused the whole that's what caused the whole pandemic. And but Randy, because you know he's usually an asshole, he blames the whole situation on China grabbing power, and also the Space Jam sequel, A New Legacy. But as he's ranting, he mentions that he sneaked marijuana seeds up his ass in the nursing home. And then this causes Stan to realize where Kenny hid his data. And, you know, because Kenny left a clue, it's like, oh, we got to think back to when we were kids. So obviously, what did they do when they were kids? They made a lot of ass jokes and fart jokes and poop jokes. And, you know, because they were immature. You know, they were just stupid kids, you know. But they still had a sense of maturity about them, you know. But they were just kids at the end of the day who liked butt jokes and fart jokes and all that. So Stan's like, oh, shit, Kenny hid his data up his... hit it up his rectum. So he leaves Randy on the farm and goes back to tell everyone. Meanwhile, Token, Craig, Tweak, Wendy, Jimmy, and Clyde, they're trying to track down Kenny's data themselves, but it's revealed that Clyde is the one person in the town who's not vaccinated, and he's the reason why they were forced to be quarantined in their town. So they attempt to get information from Kenny's only surviving colleague, a Dr. Victor Chouse. But since Clyde isn't vaccinated, they are unable to visit him at the mental hospital where he's being held. And also there's a funny moment where, cause Clyde has an allergy to shellfish, and, and Jimmy says, so you're doing this because of your, shellfishness, basically saying his selfishness, like saying, oh, you're selfish for not getting the vaccine, but it's a pun because shellfish, you know. And Clyde's like, yeah, I am doing this over due to shellfishness. And that was a good moment. But yeah, so the group, they end up discovering Kenny's secret lab in the elementary school, in the science wing that I mentioned earlier that he built. But it's covered in blood. And it's locked, but they end up getting in and it's covered in blood. And they learn that Kenny wasn't just trying to find out why COVID started, the origin of it, but he was trying to perfect time travel so he could go back and prevent it from ever happening, because he missed the way things used to be with him and his friends. And the others try to convince and trick Clyde into thinking the vaccine. This is another good moment where Wendy pretends that the vaccine is cocaine, and she's like, hey, Clyde, you want to hit a bump of cocaine coke with me? And he's like, oh, yeah. And then she does the line, and it's actually just, you know, a powdery version of the vaccine. But he realizes it's the vaccine and refuses it, leading to everyone yelling and berating him for not getting it. but that was another good moment. And so at the hospital, Stan gets himself, Kyle, and Cartman past the guard and into the morgue to get Kenny's body. Stan ends up getting the flash drive out of his ass, and they bring it to the lab at school, reuniting with Token, Craig, Tweak, and the rest of them. And they watch Kenny's final video where he's attempting to time travel. He's basically sitting in a chair with a VR-type helmet on his head. And his colleague reveals that, in the video, his colleague reveals that Kenny identified the source of the crappy future. And the bad guys who caused all this, according to Kenny, were Stan, Kyle, and Cartman, because they let the pandemic drive their friendship apart, if you remember from the vaccination special, and became, as he put it, argumentative, combative, pessimistic assholes. So after they split up, Kenny just devoted his entire life to becoming a brilliant scientist and figuring out time travel in order to go back in time, prevent the pandemic, and save their friendship. But because Kenny failed to wear his chin diaper, which is another good joke that carried over from the pandemic special, instead of a mask, they called it a chin diaper. But because he failed to wear it, there's a malfunction that occurs, which kills all the scientists, and Kenny ends up teleporting away. He reappears a few seconds later, though, now infected with the new COVID variant. We're kind of led to believe that he caught it in the past and brought COVID back to the future, which actually, now that I think about it, that does make sense, because that would explain how the new variant spread, you know, like if it, and that's, yeah, huh, that would make sense. That's kind of a neat little how they tie that in. But anyway, so, but now the fact that they know that Kenny is dead and that he blamed them all for this shitty future, they're like, well, what are we going to do now? And then, you know, Kyle, you know, everyone's about ready to give up. And then Kyle lets them know, hey, look, we can't do this. You know, we got to continue Kenny's work and go back in time and fix this mess. You know, Kyle's like, hey, we got to do this. You know, our younger selves wouldn't have given up so easily, and we're not going to now. So Stan agrees to help Kyle finish Kenny's work and perfect time travel so they can fix the future in their friendship. Carmen agrees to help, but he slips out of the lab to his family, where he admits to him, he's like, hey, they're going to go back in time and change everything, but I don't want to have everything change, because then I won't have met you guys, or I won't have met you, you know, he's talking to his wife, and you guys wouldn't have been born. So I told them I'm going to, but we're going to leave. We're leaving right now. And so he leaves with his family. We don't know where. He just leaves the school, presumably far away from the town. And then Randy, we cut back to Randy just sitting in the fields of his destroyed farm. And he sees the ghosts of Sharon and Shelley basically agreeing with him that Stan was the one who caused them both to die. And I'm like, damn, you guys, what? But yeah, they leave. Yeah, and Randy has a, you know, final heart-to-heart with them. They ascend to heaven, and he finds a single marijuana plant growing, and he vows to protect the last bit of integrity that remains. And then we cut back, and the last little cliffhanger we get to, we cut back to the mental hospital, and it's revealed that Victor Chouse, Kenny's lab assistant, was actually, his name was Victor Chaos, and his name was just a mispronunciation. Victor Chouse was just a mispronunciation of Victor Chaos. And we all know who, if you've seen the show, we all know who Professor Chaos is. He was Butter's alter ego, his villainous, super villainous alter ego. So we don't see his face, but we see his name on a little metal plaque next to the door that he's being held in, or next to the door of the cell that he's being held in. And it's like, oh shit, that's Butters. So that was a good episode, and or TV movie special, whatever you want to call it. And I'm looking for, apparently there's another special that's supposed to premiere this year, but I mean, there's only a month left of this year, so I don't know if that's going to get pushed back to next year or what, but I'm assuming it'll continue with from the end of this episode. And I hope it does, because they have, I assumed, I'm like, okay, this is all either going to be a dream or everything's going to revert back to normal by the end of it. Like they're going to, like when they revealed they were going to time travel, I'm like, okay, so they're going to go back in time, go back to when they were kids, and everything's going to kind of be retconned. Like, you know, the old saying, the status quo is God. You know, everything's going to go back to normal because the status quo, you know, is God. You know, you can't really have too much change in an animated show or anything, you know, and that's the adage that a lot of sitcoms subscribe to, you know, is that at the end of an episode, unless it's a show that specifically changes and develops the characters and changes the plot, you know, with each episode, and every episode, you know, the story continues from one episode to the next, you know, unless it's one of those story-driven shows, everything's going to kind of go back to how it was by the end of the episode. Not saying that there won't be little character moments of growth and development in the story, but for the most part, everything's going to revert back to how it was. So, but I am curious, but since they didn't do that, I'm assuming that this is going to be an ongoing thing throughout the next few movies/specials, and maybe everything will get wrapped up before the next season 24, whenever that'll start. So, but I'm curious to see how all this kind of wraps up, or what's going to happen going forward. And yeah, it was a great episode. So I guess that just about does it for my review of South Park's post-COVID special. So now let's go ahead and take a little break, and then we'll get right on to reviewing the first two episodes of Hawkeye. And now let's move on to Hawkeye, Marvel's latest series. Or at least the first two episodes of Hawkeye. So Hawkeye is Marvel's latest entry in Phase 4. It's the second to last to air this year. We still have Spider-Man No Way Home coming out next month on the 17th. So that'll be the final Marvel entry movie or show that we get for 2021. And yeah, this year was packed with a lot of Marvel content. making up for lost time they were making up for lost time from last year of not having anything Marvel related last year. So, but that's good though. I mean, we were jam packed with Marvel content, and this is the fifth Disney Plus Marvel series to be released. After, like I said, WandaVision, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Loki, and What If. So, and so, yeah, the show pretty much, it's pretty much about Hawkeye and mentoring this fan who idolizes him, this young 22-year-old girl, Kate Bishop, who, you know, has spent most of her life, you know, idolizing him and training to become a great archer like Hawkeye. Or Clint, you know, and basically what the plot, what's happened so far in the first two episodes is that Clint and Kate end up having to, they meet up for the first time and they end up having to solve a murder mystery and also confront Clint's enemies from his time, from the time that he spent as Ronin during the events of Avengers Endgame, and stop them from bringing organized crime to a head, and, you know, stop them from basically just murdering their friends and family, all within 6 days, so Clint and Kate can make it back to their families in time for Christmas. And yeah, it is set during Christmas, so I do kind of like, and I like that aspect of the show too, that it's set during the time of the year that the show aired in, because the show, like I said, the show premiered, or the first two episodes dropped this Wednesday, just dropped 3 days ago, so it's kind of cool to see that. It's kind of cool that they kind of got into the holiday spirit and decided to kind of make this, to kind of make the show in a way similar to like a, you know, an action show set during Christmas, or set during the Christmas season, or close to Christmas, you know, kind of like Die Hard, which I still have yet to see, but I will see it this year. I make it a promise to myself to watch it, because I've heard it's a great movie. And I still haven't gotten around to watching it, but yeah. So, and that's basically what the plot has been so far. And but to go a little bit more into specifics, yeah. So, pretty much the first two episodes. The first episode begins. We get a flashback to a young Kate Bishop witnessing the Battle of New York in 2012, when the Avengers first assembled, and Loki sent the Chitauri army to invade New York. You know. But she witnesses from her parents' penthouse. She witnesses Clint battling the Chitauri, and, you know, her seeing this inspires her to become a hero like him. And after he inadvertently saves her life, he didn't meet her, but what he did during the battle ends up saving her life and her mother's life. Unfortunately, though, the chaos and the Chitauri attack in New York ends up destroying their penthouse and accidentally killing Kate's father. And then we kind of get like a montage, like a silhouette montage, kind of like a James Bond montage, you know, where it's kind of like a silhouettes. You know what I mean? Like, there's like a silhouette of Kate, and we like see her growing up over the years, basically, you know, becoming skilled in martial arts and fencing and archery, and, you know, so we kind of get this neat little silhouette montage during the opening credits of the first episode. So that's pretty cool to see. But yeah, so we cut to the present day. It's now 2025, because the end of Avengers Endgame, that took place in 2023, and this is 2 years after Endgame, so, yeah, it's now 2025, okay. So, yeah, so basically, Kate's now 22 years old, We cut to Clint spending time with his kids in New York for the holidays, for Christmas. And, you know, they go to see this musical called Rogers the Musical, and it's basically a reenactment of the Battle of New York from 2012, only with some slight changes here and there, like the fact that Ant-Man was in the battle, even though he didn't join until, like, 2016, you know, and he didn't first appear in the MCU until 2015. So obviously Ant-Man, like, Scott was still alive, you know, like he was around. He just wasn't established yet, and he wasn't a part of the Avengers during the Battle of New York. But yeah, so some creative differences some changes were made during that musical. But that was a pretty funny scene of Clint and his kids watching the musical. And criticizing it, and his youngest son saying, "Why was everyone singing? That made no sense," you know. But that was a good moment. But yeah, so we see them going to a musical, eating Chinese food, and, you know, going to Rockefeller Center, you know, just hanging out, having a good time, enjoying Christmas, enjoying the scenery of New York. And and then we meet Kate, who ends up, or we meet grown up Kate, 22-year-old Kate, who, you know, she's doing well for herself. She has her own apartment, and her mom, Eleanor, ends up, she finds out that she's engaged. Well, she attends this charity auction, this gala, where she finds out that her mother is engaged to this, you know, rich, successful guy, Jack Duquesne, who is played by Tony Dalton, who I thought was cool. Because when he first popped up, I'm like, oh shit, that's Lalo. Because the only thing I've seen Tony Dalton in was Better Call Saul. He plays one of the Salamanca members of the Salamanca family, Lalo Salamanca. And he does a great job in that show. And I'm still waiting for season 6 of that show. It's supposed to premiere sometime next year, but it was cool to see him again after having waited so long for the final season of Better Call Saul. It was cool to kind of see Tony Dalton in something else. And he, so far, I mean, he's played his role pretty well. You can kind of tell there's something up with him. Not just because Kate's suspicious of him, but because he does kind of have a suspicious way, not a suspicious way of talking, but like it kind of seems like, based on his demeanor, that he is kind of hiding something, and what we see later in this episode and the next one is clear. But she finds that out. Kate's obviously a little upset about this, and she sneaks away. Well, she sees Jack sneak away during the gala, and she follows him a couple stories under to a black market auction that's going on while the charity auction's going on. And it's basically the auction's featuring items recovered from the remains of the Avengers compound. And Jack's there, and his uncle, Armand III, are among the guests at the auction. And the auction's interrupted by the Tracksuit Mafia, a Russian street gang, who they're basically trying to recover this watch among the items, this very... what we're led to believe is this very valuable, rare watch, or this watch that's important to them. And during the chaos, Kate recovers Barton's suit, or Clint's suit, his Ronin suit, from the time he spent as Ronin in Endgame, and she defeats the Tracksuit Mafia members while wearing it. And we get a cool action sequence of her beating the shit out of them with her karate, you know, with her karate moves, and, you know, like there's this scene where there's like this wine rack built into the wall, and she ends up like punching bottles, kicking bottles, and hitting them in the head. And that it was a cool action sequence among this, you know, a myriad of chaos, like of the, you know, them trying to escape, and you know, of everyone trying to escape, and them trying to find the watch. And, you know, it was a cool action sequence. And but she ends up leaving, and she escapes to her apartment after rescuing this stray dog. This dog follows her, or she runs into this dog. She rescues him, brings him back to her apartment, names him Lucky, and or the, I think they name him next episode. But anyway, yeah, so they track down Armand to investigate what happened further. And then Kate discovers, when she ends up sneaking into his place, that he's been murdered in his home. And she ends up escaping just before what I'm assuming is, like, his housekeeper or his maid comes in with groceries and says, "Oh, hey, Mr. Armand, how are you?" You know, and then she screams upon noticing his body on the floor. And he's got, like, a stab wound in the in his back, and he's, like, laying on his stomach, blood spilled out everywhere on the rug. And so, yeah, Kate manages to quietly leave just before the maid notices her there at all. So, but yeah, she's cornered, but she ends up escaping, and she ends up getting cornered by some of the members of the tracksuit mafia after fleeing the crime scene. And, Clint, and then we cut back to Clint, a few minutes earlier, we cut back to him, during this, and, he ends up seeing a news report when him and his kids get back to the hotel they're staying at. He sees a news report on Kate. And, you know, they got some images of her in the Ronin suit, and he's like, what the hell? Like, what's going on there? You know, so he ends up going to where they were last, where she was last found, you know, leaves his kids. He's like, hey, guys, you stay here. I'm going to go see what this is about, you know. And he ends up running into Kate being, you know, kind of, you know, well, she ends up running into Kate, who is trying to beat up the gangsters, and who kind of have her cornered. He helps her and drags her into an alley, removes the mask, and then finds out, you know, and then sees who she is. And he hasn't met her yet, but Kate is, you know, completely enamored with him. She's like, you're Hawkeye, you know, like she's just fangirling over him. And then the episode ends. She's like, you're Hawkeye, you know, just surprised to see him. And Clint's like, who the hell are you? And then it just cuts to black. And, but that was a great first episode, and I like the title too, Never Meet Your Heroes, because, I don't know, it was kind of a neat, episode title for the fact that, that Kate obviously every time, you know, that saying comes from the fact that, oh, if you meet your heroes, you're probably going to find something disturbing about them or dark or something you don't want to find out, something that bad that happened in their past. And obviously Kate would probably be a little, you know, concerned, you know, might be a little hesitant to believe that Clint actually, you know, became a vigilante and murdered. I mean, she might understand and she might be okay with it, but she'll probably be a little bit more suspicious of Clint, or she might be a little bit more, she might not completely 100% agree with what he did, because, you know, he's for most of his career as an Avenger, he represented himself as this hero, you know, and the fact that he went as a vigilante and brutally murdered, you know, seeked out members of the mafia and the Yakuza and other organized crime members and basically wiped them all out with them having done nothing wrong to him. I mean, obviously they'd done wrong things, but the fact that he went out and seeked them out and murdered almost all of them, she's probably gonna be a little hesitant to, you know, she might, you know, if that's revealed to her later, she's probably gonna be a little, I can't think of the word. She's probably gonna be a little bit, iffy about, she might change her mind about idolizing him, or she might become a little conflicted with, you know, the Hawkeye that she's known and loved for most of her life. So there we go. I don't know why I couldn't think of how to word what I was saying, but yeah, so great episode. Episode two, Hide and Seek, basically picks up right where the first one ended off. Kate takes Clint back to her apartment, but they end up being attacked by the tracksuit mafia, who followed her from, you know, the where they were a moments earlier in the alleyway. And they end up throwing Molotov cocktails into her apartment, causing her apartment to burst into flames. And they end up having to evacuate, leaving Clint's Ronin suit behind. And they relocate to, they end up going to Kate's vacationing aunt's apartment. Like, her aunt's out on vacation, so she ends up staying there, and she picks the lock to her apartment. And Clint sends his kids back home the next day. He tells Kate, okay, I'll come back tomorrow. You just lay low, stay here until I get back. And Clint sends his kids back home. He goes back to the apartment, you know, puts them in a limo, and he promises them that he'll be back by Christmas Day, which is in 5 days from now. So, but he escorts Kate. He takes her to her place of work, which she works alongside her mother, or not alongside her mother, but with her mother at their security. They run a security company. And then he ends up going to, shortly after the, So he ends up taking her to her place of work, which is the security, which, like I said, her and her mother work at this, her mother owns this security company. And, he recovers the Ronin suit from a firefighter named Grills at a live action role playing or a LARP event in the park. And that was a funny scene of that whole sequence of Clint trying to get the suit back and begrudgingly having to enter the event, enter the event and put on the knight, the suit of armor, what little armor he had, and having to actually fight Grills. It was pretty funny because he's like, what are you all doing, but it was funny seeing him having to go through that just to get the suit. And yeah, that was a funny scene. But yeah, so later we the cops end up calling Kate for questioning, and she lies and says, oh, well, I'm at work right now. Can we do it tomorrow? And, she buys herself some time. And later that night, Kate, her mother Eleanor, and Jack are are having dinner at Eleanor's place, and she saw at the auction that Jack was trying to buy Ronan's Clint's retractable sword from the time that he spent as Ronan, and she ends up seeing that he stole it, during the chaos. And during the Tracksuit Mafia's break-in at the silent auction, the underground auction, she saw him steal the sword and escape. So she assumes that Jack ended up killing his uncle Armand III, because earlier the previous night she saw her mother and Armand getting into an argument. So she thinks, oh, well, that's a little suspicious that as soon as you guys were getting it, the night that you guys got into an argument, Armand was found dead a few hours later at his apartment. And so she, tries to not so subtly accuse, question and accuse Jack of his... questioning and accusing him of did you murder your uncle? And it eventually comes to a head when the two of them get into a fencing match and she almost cuts his head off or, stabs him in the head. And Eleanor's obviously pissed at Kate because she doesn't actually, she doesn't believe her. And Jack's playing it so cool, but you can tell that he's hiding something, Like, he's not, a mustache twirling, haha, I'm evil. It's not, he's not being obvious or unsubtle with it, but it's, you could tell that he's hiding something. Just because, well, one, the fact that he, like I said, stole the sword amidst the silent auction break-in. And the fact that, like Kate said, it was suspicious that his uncle just happened to die a few hours after, Eleanor, who is... Jack's fiance, got into a heated argument with him, so she's, she, after, the duel, Eleanor kind of forces Kate to apologize to Jack, and she begrudgingly, she words it. She's like, I'm sorry I almost exposed, well, I'm paraphrasing, but she's like, I'm sorry I almost exposed you for the liar you are or something. And then leading into Jack saying, ah, she's smart as a whip, isn't she? And, you know, just playing it off as being nice. And so anyway, so the next day follows, and Kate tries to call Clint, who earlier the previous day told her only to call him unless it was an emergency, or not to call him unless it was an emergency. And she ends up accidentally, or she doesn't know that he purposely allowed himself to be captured by the Tracksuit Mafia. And because she's, you know, she works at this, you know, security company, she ends up tracking down where Clint is, and she, and they're at this, like, abandoned mall, and she tries to, during this interrogation scene of the mafia trying to question Hawkeye, or Clint, they, she ends up getting captured after she falls through the roof, and, and they end up duct taping the both of them to, like, these little kiddie rocket rides. And then Clint, you know, Clint and Kate kind of have a little back and forth argument, and he lets them know, he's like, hey, I want to speak to your boss. Clint's like, you know, I feel like I'm not getting anywhere with you guys. Who's in charge here? And so the Ivan, the kind of head of their group, you know, not the head, but like the head of their group, goes to inform their boss, who's this, like, blind, this really badass-looking deaf Asian girl, Asian woman, that, oh, yeah, hey, we've got the prisoners. What do you want to do? And she tells, and again, I'm paraphrasing, but she's like, you know, go back out there. I'll deal with them, you know, and she signs off. And then the episode ends with a close-up of her face, and she smiles, and it cuts to black. So apparently, and I figured that was her because, her name is Echo, or Maya Lopez. Echo is like her code name, or like her supervillain name, or, you know. And I know nothing about this character, but I knew that from a few months ago she was getting a spinoff, because they, Disney Plus Day, they, well, I guess it was a couple months ago, but they announced it again at Disney Plus, or during Disney Plus Day on the 12th of this month, that that she was getting a spinoff, and she was a character that was going to debut in Hawkeye. So. And I figured she, as soon as she popped up, I'm like, oh shit, is this Echo? Because she was like, because she was, you know, using sign language when she was speaking to Ivan. So I'm like, oh, it's gotta be her. So, just based on her code name or supervillain name, I'm like, oh, that's her. But yeah, so great first two episodes. Yelena hasn't shown up yet. She's supposed to show up at some point in the show. I'm assuming that'll probably be the next episode. But I can't wait because, like I said in my Black Widow review, I love Yelena. I love Florence Pugh. She's gorgeous. I have a huge crush on her. but she's a great actress in what I've seen her in Midsommar and Black Widow. And I'm really looking forward to her movie next year. Don't worry, darling. And but yeah, so I can't wait for Yelena to show up. I can't wait to see how the show concludes with the next and last four episodes. And I'm really looking forward to it. So, oh yeah. And also so far, yeah, Jeremy Renner has done a great job as Clint, as he always does. And so far, Hailee Steinfeld has done a great job as Kate, as well as everyone else, Tony Dalton and, Eleanor's actress. Yeah, they've all done a great job. So, but, I guess that just about does it for tonight's episode. So, hope you guys, enjoyed. Hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving, a great Black Friday, and I hope you have a great, relaxing weekend, and I will see you guys next week for a review to be determined. I'll let you know next week. Take care.